If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is Dr. Mike and my favorite segment of the show, Gary Ginsberg's What's Toxic, What's Not segment. And Gary, I've got to tell you, you're going to educate me. I may be the only person who doesn't know what loom bands are. But before we get to that, what's not toxic is one of the subjects. A Pac-Man algae eating, the Pac-Man algae that eat heavy metal toxic sludge. Tell us about that, and then what do you do with the algae after you're done eating?
Well, I always like to talk about what's not toxic, because not everything is bad for us or bad for the environment. And here is a case of a polluted tin mine in Cornwall, England, in which they've had to deal with the heavy metal sludge for over a decade now, and slowly cleaning it up until somebody came up with the bright idea to bioremediate it, which means to use biology or to use the biota, you know, microbes or some form of organism to eat up or absorb out the toxins. And so we've heard about bacteria slowly breaking down some kinds of bacteria. We've never heard of a way to get rid of metals, heavy metals. And at this tin mine, they are now experimenting, and this has a lot of problems, with algae. So algae are known to do a variety of different things. We can now make high-grade cooking oil from algae grown in vats, like beer fermentation vats. Out in California, they're experimenting with that. Well, at this mine, they have discovered in the reeds and the weeds outside the mine, they discovered algae growing that were resistant to the heavy metals. Not a lot grows in a toxic waste sludge, but these reeds and the algae on the reeds were growing. And they discovered that the algae are very resistant to the metals, but could take up the metals. We're talking about arsenic and cadmium and lead, really toxic things that most forms of wildlife and plant life would succumb to. So anyway, this algae now, they're harvesting and growing it out in vats. And they feel that if they pump the toxic sludge into these vats, the algae will absorb out and actually live on the arsenic and the cadmium and the lead. And then they could then crush down the algae and, get this, recycle the metals into electronics, which there is some heavy metals that does go into electronics. So isn't that wild? You could take algae, suck out the heavy metals from toxic sludge, and then recycle it. And then
so it's a double recycling process. You're not only getting rid of the toxin, but you're actually using it in a constructive way.
It's actually a triple. Yeah, you're right, Mike, but it's actually a triple piece, because they also feel that these algae will be able to generate energy. So it'll also make a biofuel at the same time out of some of the other materials in the toxic sludge. So a triple winner there, which that's what we need. You know, we need those kinds of innovations for the environment to get rid of the toxicity and to promote healthier energy sources in the future. And algae, I think, is going to be a key to a lot of innovation as we go forward.
Isn't that great? Now, one of the things, because I was worried what was going to eat the algae, the other one that I've heard like this is, in fact, one of the ways we clean up the land in Ohio is plant ragweed. Ragweed concentrates the mercury and lead in the ground very effectively into its plant. And then there's a ragweed recycling plant. There are only apparently two in the United States that do this. Well, one's in Michigan, so they have to ship the ragweed there to get recycled and to do exactly what you're saying, to get the heavy metals out of the ragweed so that it's not just recycled into nature.
Yep, and poplar trees are very fast-growing trees that are known to suck toxins out of the ground and can be used to quote-unquote bioremediate at toxic waste sites. So our approach is, the old days, you know, we would just get a big shovel and fill up dump truck after dump truck, getting rid of all the contaminated soil. And, yeah, if you're in a rush, you might need to do that. But if you could take a little bit more time and bioremediate it, it may be a much less invasive solution.
Now, 33 brain cancers in a small town near a vinyl chloride plant. The plaintiffs got their day in court. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is the town of McCollum Lake Village. I'm guessing about 100 miles south of Chicago in McHenry County. And the residents there lived for a long time without knowing that they had a very harsh carcinogen in their drinking water called vinyl chloride. And the plant up the road, about a mile up the road in Ringwood, Illinois, just a mile up the road, they were putting that chemical into the ground. And so a court case that I've been following pretty closely that has gone through lots of serpentine twists and turns, epidemiology trying to prove that there was a brain cancer cluster. I mean, 33 brain cancers, three people got the same type of brain cancer living right next to each other. So really clustered, and the epidemiology was really questioned in court, but I think it was pretty undeniable. The toxicology was also questioned on the grounds of whether vinyl chloride causes that kind of cancer. I mean, it's clear that vinyl chloride causes liver cancer. Does it cause brain cancer? Anyway, but the dots were connected enough. But now, a settlement, after 8 years of following the case, a settlement was made, and this went all the way to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, because the company that was responsible is based in Pennsylvania. The 33 brain cancer cases, I don't know what they won't say, they're very tight-lipped, what the total settlement is for, but it must be for a significant amount, because the lawyers for the plaintiffs were pretty happy. But, you know, the bottom line here is that, you know, have your eyes open if you are on a private drinking water well. You really want to know what's in your area. And these people were a mile away. And a mile seems like a long distance when you're walking the dog. But it's not that far when it comes to chemicals traveling underground in groundwater and getting to people's drinking water supplies. So if you're on your own well, you want to make sure at least once or twice while you're living in that house, maybe every 5 years if you're living pretty close to things like gas stations and old farms, test the well to make sure it doesn't have a carcinogen like this in it.
Okay, rather than go to the story about the swimming pool being a sink for personal care products, I've got to find out, what are loom bands?
Okay, loom bands are a spreading wave of I'll call it a craft toy. It's things that little kids can weave together, sort of like childhood crochet, where it's based on these plastic wristbands that you could string together and make like a bikini out of, make like a little dress out of, make like a handbag out of. And kids are really enjoying the craftiness and the colorfulness because, you know, they're all different colors of plastic. But the problem is it's like 40% phthalate. And around little kids who like to chew on things, they will be able to absorb the phthalate out of the beaded material and into their mouth and you can get exposure that way. Just recently in Scotland, four separate cases of the kids inhaling the fine, small material that you'd be weaving together, the bands, they inhaled it and had to go to the emergency room to get these things pulled out of their nose. So fairly shocking that a toy could do that to a kid, where it was small enough particles and they spend up close time to it that actually involved too much material and it clogged them up and they couldn't breathe.
You've been listening to Gary Ginsberg, whatstoxic.com, what's toxic, what's not, the segment I enjoy most. Hopefully you do too. We'll be back right away with Gary next week, and right away with more on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.